want the Republicans to wake up is what the Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live.
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
As always, I am grateful to the people who choose to subscribe to this program. And I want to thank our brand new subscriber, Mark Dempsey. John Zweibel from Hawaii just re-upped for another year, as did Robert Getzla. Thank you. And thanks as well to Diane Morris, a monthly subscriber to the Peter B. Collins Show. All the details and the links to set it up are on my homepage, under my picture on the left-hand side at peterbcollins.com. Today's podcast is brief, but since it's only once every 600 years or so that a pope retires or resigns, I thought we'd get this out without delay. Monday morning, I woke up to the news that Pope Benedict XVI has given 2 weeks' notice. He's announced that his age and unspecified infirmities have caused him to resign the papacy. And joining me to comment is Father Thomas Rees. He is a Jesuit who was a longtime editor of the magazine America. And in the interest of full disclosure, he once survived a sailboat outing with me at the helm out on San Francisco Bay. Father Tom, how are you today?
I'm good. I enjoyed that trip very much.
You must be quite in demand today to talk about the decision by the former Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger to retire.
It's been a busy day. People were very surprised by the announcement. I was surprised that it happened today, but I had been expecting something like this at least sometime during this century. I mean, modern medicine is capable of keeping us alive long beyond the point where we are still physically and mentally able to do a job like the Pope has. So I think, you know, just looking at our parents and grandparents, we know that, you know, there comes a point where sometimes you can no longer function in the work you've been doing. And I think that's the decision that the Pope made. He felt that his health was just not strong enough to do the very difficult work of being Pope.
And the only thing I really know about is that he reportedly nodded off during Christmas Mass at St. Peter's this past Christmas. Do we know what his health concerns are?
We really don't know. We know that he's had more and more trouble walking, and, well, I mean, he's just getting up there in age. I think it's quite admirable that he is willing to step aside for the good of the Church. I mean, rather than cling to the office and the power of being Pope, he's made a judgment about what's best for the Church, and really that's what we all should be doing.
Now, Father Rees, to what extent would you characterize this Pope as a micromanager? Because as the former head of the Office of the Congregation of the Faithful, the enforcer of dogma from the Vatican, he was very active in operational matters of the Church. And you were, in some ways, a target of his, because shortly after he ascended to the papacy, he instructed your religious leaders to remove you from the post as editor of America.
Well, it's interesting. The a number of people don't look upon the Pope as really a good manager. He's an academic. He's a scholar. He's an intellectual. And some of the complaints have been that he has not managed the Vatican bureaucracy. And in fact, some people are suggesting that that's what they ought to look for in a new pope, is someone who could manage the Vatican bureaucracy. He certainly didn't micromanage that. On the other hand, you're quite correct. I think that as a teacher, as a theologian, he held very strong views about theology and about what the church ought to be doing. And those people who either disagreed with him or would have liked to have had more discussion in the church sometimes got into trouble. Priests, religious, nuns, theologians, all of those kind of people have gotten in trouble with the Pope.
And one of the other people who I'm aware of is Father Roy Bourgeois, who did just incredible work and I believe is still involved with the School of the Americas Watch. But because he participated in the rogue ordination of women, he was targeted by the Vatican and by the Pope's successor as the enforcer, Cardinal Levada, who used to be our Archbishop here in San Francisco. And he was excommunicated and then laicized, meaning that his religious order was instructed to defrock him this past November.
Well, it's clear that the Pope and the Vatican feel very strongly that women cannot be ordained. They believe that this is a dogmatic teaching of the Church. Jesus never ordained women. And as a result, they feel that even if they wanted to, they could not do this. And so they would take a very strong reaction against any priest that was involved in such an ordination. On the other hand, I mean, I think it's well known that there are many theologians in the church who disagree with the Pope on this, who support the ordination of women. This is a very controversial topic. But the Pope is in charge, and he's made very clear his position on these issues.
And as an administrator at the Vatican, he helped purge some of the priests and bishops who were active in politics. Father Drinan from Massachusetts served in Congress until the Vatican told him to step down. The purveyors of liberation theology in Central and South America were reined in by the Church. But now we've seen, particularly in the United States in the past 2 years, a re-injection of Catholic leadership into domestic secular politics. And I'm talking about Cardinal Dolan and his pushback on Obamacare because it includes contraceptive coverage, and some of the other moves, including the very overt involvement with partners from the Mormon Church in passing Proposition 8, the anti-gay marriage referendum here in California.
Well, the Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II have been very strong in saying that priests cannot run for political office. They cannot hold political office. And that's why they went after Bob Drinan and said he had to leave that. And there was a Jesuit that was and priests who were involved in the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. They were told to resign from government. There's a bishop who is running for president in Paraguay. So they're very much against this kind of thing. This is something that's unique to the Catholic Church. We see lots of people running for president. Pat Robertson, who was a minister. Jesse Jackson, who was a minister running for president, and their churches don't object to that. But the Catholic Church does not want priests running for a political office. On the other hand, the Vatican, the Pope, the bishops have been very vocal in the public debate, which is different from running for office. They have been very vocal in pointing out the political issues that they believe are ethical issues, moral issues. So, for example, the Catholic bishops were joined the circle of protection and concern for poor people, not wanting them to be hurt by the cuts in the budget. They've also spoken out on gay marriage and abortion and other issues like this. You know, the Pope has been in American terms, he would be considered conservative on abortion and gay marriage and things like that. But he's to the left of Nancy Pelosi when it comes to economic issues. He's been very critical of the financial community for this financial crisis. And he speaks openly of the role of government in regulation and in the redistribution of wealth. Now, you won't hear any politician in the United States talking about using government to redistribute wealth. But that's one of the things that Pope Benedict is in favor of.
Now, Tom, just last week I was talking about some of these issues and the political operations of the Catholic Church in domestic politics, and it was fueled by a documentary that is currently showing on HBO called Mea Maxima Culpa. And it is a very disturbing depiction of the long-term sex abuse scandals and cover-ups in the Catholic Church. It starts off in Milwaukee back in the 1970s. And Cardinal Ratzinger was at the center of what we now see as a cover-up. And there are letters and other documents showing that he repeatedly declined the pleas of local bishops to remove offending priests from service. And he was really directing from the Vatican a canon law-based cover-up saying that you could not report the sex crimes of priests to local secular law enforcement authorities. And my case is that this really undermines any credibility that the church and its human leaders have on issues of personal morality, including sexuality. And I'm wondering to what extent you feel that the burden of managing this ongoing scandal and the cost, which is now pegged at upwards of $2 billion in settlements that have been paid out, became a real source of stress and a kind of personal weight on the Pope.
Well, I have not seen the HBO show, but there's no question the sex abuse crisis has been an absolute disaster. First of all, for the victims. I mean, the church needs to, you know, and the bishops need to get down on their knees and apologize to the victims of abuse. This was just absolutely terrible what happened to them. You know, with regards to Cardinal Ratzinger and how he responded to this crisis, did he respond as fast as people would have liked? No. Did he respond faster than anybody else in Rome? Yes. He certainly responded faster than Pope John Paul II. Cardinal Ratzinger who put into place the procedures for, you know, throwing priests out of the priesthood in a fast-track process without a trial, frankly, and to remove these priests as quickly as possible from the ministry. So did he do as well a job looking back as we would have liked him to do? No. Did he improve over time? Yes. And, you know, thanks to him, the church is in a much better place today in dealing with abuse than it was at the beginning of the reign of John Paul II.
That's very interesting because, you know, with all due respect, there, for example, is a document that shows that he instructed the bishop in Oakland, California, that he could not remove an offending priest. And the tone of this film, and I hope you will see it, is that he was much more concerned about the impact on the image of the church and on the priesthood itself than on the victims. And I really appreciate, Tom, that you led your comments by talking compassionately about the victims. But, you know, Cardinal Dolan took the Archdiocese of Milwaukee into bankruptcy to avoid paying settlements to some of the victims. And we've seen that play out in, what, five other dioceses or archdioceses across the country.
Yeah, I am not defending what the bishops did, nor, you know, would I defend everything that Cardinal Ratzinger did. I'm simply making the point that he did a better job than John Paul II.
Mm-hmm.
He did a better job at this than anybody else in Rome at the time. And if you look at the dates of most of those of the documents you're talking about, those were the ones that were, you know, he and many other people in the church were making mistakes. He learned over time and changed. Sadly, the church did not learn fast enough. Tragically, the church did not learn fast enough. And we need to get on our knees and ask forgiveness for that fact.
And
it doesn't detract from the fact that he did move forward on this.
Okay.
Not as fast as I would have liked or anybody else would have liked, but the church is in a much better place today than it was back then.
Now, I want to respect your time. Just one final question, Father Reese. The recent announcement by the current Archbishop of Los Angeles that basically stripped retired Cardinal Mahoney of any public functions, that is a remarkable censure of a retired cardinal. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime. How unusual was that decision by the Archbishop?
Oh, it was extraordinary. I think it amounted to a public shaming of the cardinal by the Archbishop of Los Angeles. You know, to acknowledge publicly that he did not do a good job in protecting children, and that you know, he felt that he had to do something. You know, publicly had to, you know, do as much as he could to you know, actually punish the cardinal for that. And that's quite remarkable. I've never seen any other archbishop so publicly take to task his predecessor.
Father Reese, thanks for your time today. I appreciate your comments. Thomas Reese is a Roman Catholic priest and the former editor of the magazine America.
Thank you.
And before you even suggest it, I shall not be a candidate for the next pope.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until